I'm your host, Rena Friedman Watts, and this is the Better Call Daddy Show.
Hey, this is Big Daddy, Wayne Friedman.
That's my grandpa. Grandpa, you ready for more daddy drama?
My dad is my number one hero and number one fan.
And I'm a pretty cool dude.
All right, season four, baby, here we go.
More stories you're not going to believe.
And maybe you will after you listen.
5 stars.
5.5 stars, 2 thumbs up.
You are a pretty cool dude.
Love you, Mommy.
Don't stand on the table and damn the public. You'll get some words of wisdom to live by.
Here we go again. Better call Daddy.
You know what your problem is? You like me.
Yeah, I do. Each week, I interview a guest, share the stories with my dad, and then he weighs in at the end of every episode with his wisdom and wit.
Hey, Grandpa.
Everyone from influential players to inspirational fathers and, of course, controversial people.
Grandpa, my mom is calling.
Creating that legacy one call at a time. And welcome to the Better Call Daddy Show.
Stay tuned.
Where's the music?
Better call Daddy because he knows you best. Better call Daddy because he's bringing the test. He sees possibilities. Better call Daddy, you're the apple of his eye. He sees possibilities. All to be.
You want to learn the secret to success? You're never too young to learn about money, stocks, and the market. Today's guest, Devin Woolwin, became interested in stocks at the age of 5. He's written 2 best-selling books. He has a podcast with his dad. And my dad says he's very mature for his age. Devin, welcome to the Better Call Daddy Show.
Yeah, talk to me a little bit about your upbringing. You have been learning from your parents and implementing what your parents are teaching you from a very young age.
Yeah, my parents, they've always been, well, at least for as long as I've been alive, they've been in business and investing. And so it was just kind of natural for me to get interested in it. They started making it into games in a couple of ways. And so it was more fun for me. That's another big reason I got interested in it.
How do you make real estate and business into games? Because you were doing this from like the time you were in a baby carrier.
Well, I guess they started taking me to real estate meetings in a baby carrier, but really the first big example is when my dad started teaching me how to reconcile. I just went in and wanted to play a game with my dad. And he's like, all right, Devin, come sit here. What you're going to do is you're just going to match up the things on the screen to the things down here. If they match, you're going to put a little check mark next to it. And then when you're done, when you get to the bottom, if the number is 0, you win. Introduced it just like it was the game memory.
And then you became obsessed with reconciling?
I wouldn't say obsessed, but I did quite a bit of it.
Okay, and then what happened from there?
He had me doing more and more things, and eventually I just decided that I wanted to start investing. And I told my dad, hey, Dad, I think it's time that I should start investing. What should I invest in? And keep in mind, I'm 5 years old at this time. So he tells me, well, Devin, I'll tell you what I tell everybody. Invest in what you know.
And what did you know at 5? Toys.
At 5 years old, I knew a lot about Legos. And so I found a way to invest in that. And I made plenty of mistakes. I was a 5-year-old trying to invest. And I learned from a lot of those, which have probably saved me a lot of money since then.
How do you invest in Legos other than buying a lot of them?
Well, that's kind of it. Lego, after a while, stops making their sets. And then you can technically still buy them on eBay or whatever, but then the price is frequently near double what it was. And I had also heard the phrase, buy low, sell high. So putting 2 and 2 together, if we buy it for the lower price, while they're still making it, wait and sell it for the higher price, I can make money with that. And then which set do I invest in? Well, let's go for the oldest set I can think of and the biggest one, the Lego Death Star. And I started saving up money, but I didn't think I was saving up quite enough. So I got my little brother and said, hey, Ethan, how about you partner with me on this? The only problem is he's even younger than I am. And so we were still very slow getting the money, and Lego retired the set before we bought it. And by the time we bought the set, it was an extra $100. The price went from $400 to $500. And then when it came time to sell it, when we thought, all right, this is getting about as high as it's going to get, we decided instead of using the professional eBay, we were just going to sell it on Craigslist because it was cheaper. And that's when we learned our second lesson in this. And that's always hire professionals, because Craigslist didn't sell as fast. And then Lego did something we did not expect. They released a new version of the same set. Then ours went back down to about what we had paid for it.
So were you able to sell it for more?
No, actually, we still own that set today. We've talked about enough radio shows and stuff. Because at the time, it wasn't really worth anymore. It was worth what we paid for it. So not really a big reason to sell it. Then we waited. It was actually, they retired that new version of the set recently in the last year or so. But we decided that we're just not going to sell it. Eventually, we'll use it in some charity auction to raise a ridiculous amount of money for charity. Because now I've told that story how many times about that Lego set. It's become a kind of famous Lego set.
I'm surprised at that age that you and your brother weren't like, let's just play with it.
To be totally honest, we considered it, but no, this was for an investment. We were going to keep it as that.
That's very mature and responsible at that age. Do you feel like you ever just act like a kid because you're so successful in so many areas of your life at such a young age?
There are times when I can act like a kid, and there are times where I need to be professional. Like right now, we're talking on a podcast and I need to be professional. Like I'm wearing my suit. I've got my attitude on business and investing. And when I get home, if I'm not doing, you know, college homework or anything, then I might go grab one of my toys and play with that or whatever else. So it's not like I'm not a kid sometimes, but there's a time where you can be a kid and have fun, and there's a time you need to be professional. The real key is knowing the difference and being able to essentially keep yourself on track.
Wow. What happens if you have kids and they're like, I don't want to be on track. I just want to be a kid until I get out of your house.
Then that is their choice. I will try and teach them whatever I can, but if they don't want to learn, I can't teach them. Although that is, maybe I need to find a more fun way to teach them.
Ooh,
maybe
that's a good point.
I should get them playing the board game Cash Flow, which teaches about business and investing. Maybe I should have them start doing other things. That is as much as I need to find a better way to teach them as anything else.
I actually love that you just said that, because I feel like today teachers are having trouble reaching their students and engaging them. And the way that you've learned has not been through traditional school. Can you talk a little bit about your educational path?
Yeah, absolutely. Real quickly, thank you very much for having me on your show. We kind of just jumped into this. My schooling, I've been homeschooled my entire life, except for I've also been going to college since I was 12. And that's an interesting story. But my parents, they were always teaching me about business and investing. I've always had a business slash investing class since I pretty much started school, or at least as long as I can remember. And so they were teaching me about money, about business, about investing, about all these things. And they were teaching it to me mostly in a fun way. They were teaching me with games and other things. They brought me to meetings. They really integrated me in with the business. And I think that's really one of the big parts of why I've done as much as I have. They had me doing some of the fun things. One mistake I see plenty of people make that are, say, in real estate and want to get their kids into it, they have their kids do everything. Like, they'll have them sanding drywall and spraying for bed bugs and everything else. And sure, some of the more fun stuff, but if a kid really doesn't like that and you make them do that, how interested do you think they're going to actually be in your business? Whereas if, say, they're like my brother and like destruction, if you let them go in and kick down the drywall when it needs removed, wouldn't that work a lot better for you? Just an idea.
Yeah, there's rooms that you can rent now to destroy things. Have you done that before?
if I want to get something to destroy, we have plenty of rehabs or something where I can go find something that needs taken out and do that.
I agree with you. I think more kids would want to get into rehabbing if they got to destroy a wall or two.
Maybe. And it's a far better way of taking out rage than on, I don't know, your own actual wall that's good. I don't know.
Yeah. Tell me some more fun parts of the real estate investing.
It really depends on what you like to do. Like, if you like talking to people, there is a lot of different things where you can talk to people, advertise. We literally, I now run the real estate brokerage for my family. I'm the COO, and we have a receptionist whose pretty much entire goal is to talk to people and either get them to the right department, or if they're looking to move in, schedule them a showing. And if you like research, there's a different group for that. If you like dealing with numbers, you can deal in the bookkeeping side. There's all kinds of different things for different people. And the only way the business works is if you can find the right people for each job. And at least when you're starting a business, that might only be one or two people total. Frequently, people start doing everything themselves. But after a while, once you get big enough, you'll probably hire more and more people, at least if you want to continue growing.
That's a really good point. I love that you're learning that at such a young age. Like, not everyone is going to be good at all aspects of the job. So if you can give them the work that they enjoy doing, they'll probably extend from there.
Exactly. Everybody has different skills. Like, I am good and quite a few different things. I'm great at creativity and coming up with new ideas and stuff like that. And my brother, he is great at just being fearless and pushing through, even when he really should just ask for help. And
but he is young. How old is your brother?
He's 13 right now. So everybody has different skills. And if you can find a way to use each one of those, then you can achieve a lot with that.
I'm actually really impressed, too, because when we did an episode on your radio show together, I recommended a tool that I used, and then you were able to do what I did with the tool immediately. That just goes to show, if you have an open mind, you can pick up a new skill a day.
And yeah, you can pick up skills incredibly quickly, you know, have an open mind, be willing to learn, want to learn, and just get started on it. Like, you sent me that tool. And I mean, that wasn't the first tool I've seen similar to that. I believe that was an AI tool to generate different letters and text to go with a video. And I'm like, that's cool. I don't really need that. I'm sure that would be useful for some things, but I'm not working as much with that. And we've decided that we're not going to use AI for like writing our newsletters. That being said, it's a cool tool to have. And I've been looking into AI more and more. It's becoming a really big thing in this world. And so I'm going to need to know a lot about it. AI is going to get massive probably in my lifetime. And so I need to understand what's going on.
I love that you realize that. And I agree. What do you think that AI can't replace?
It depends how much power we give it. Because in theory, they can replace everything. If you give them a body to work in and the intelligence of the smartest human being on the planet, which they will far surpass, and you find a way to give them some type of emotions or feelings, or at least simulated emotions or feelings, there's not a job they can't replace. There are some things that will be harder to replace and will take longer, but in theory, they can replace everything because, as the name implies, it's just artificial intelligence.
I was just thinking it would be cool, and I was having a conversation with somebody earlier about this, if the intelligence could somehow digitize like our ancestry and we could get to know more of where we came from, or we could incorporate some of those ideas into our ideas now, like learn from our history type of thing.
There are plenty of things. If it is possible to do by anyone, it will be possible for AI to do, and they will probably be able to do it quicker, because to do that, really what you'd have to do if I understand what you're saying, is you'd either have to look at historical data, which most of it you'd have to find online, and AI is probably faster than anyone at that, or at least it will be. And you could also look at, and this is something I don't know anything about, I've just seen a couple of YouTube videos on it, but supposedly you can also kind of look back at where we came from based on our DNA and stuff. And if you gave it the right tools and gave it, I don't know, a sample of something, your blood maybe, then it could theoretically figure out, like, this is your rough ancestry of, like, major milestones going back as long as the human race has existed or before.
Isn't that wild?
It's pretty interesting, at least. And only slightly scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy some of the things that we're figuring out how to do. Just the technology today is increasing so rapidly. Things that 10 years ago would have been insane to think of, we are achieving over and over, from the AI and creating ChatGPT. Would you have thought that was even possible 10 years ago?
No, and I use it honestly every day. Do you?
I use it sometimes. It can work as a better browser, like, hey, can you research this for me? I don't have the time or energy, or you are just 10 times faster than me at finding this one specific thing that I need. Or, hey, do research and give me this list of things. It's useful for certain things. I do not and will not use it for something that, like, I'm going to say is actually mine. Like, if I wouldn't hire a secretary to do it, I won't use ChatGPT for it, because that just feels wrong. But not everybody is like that. So, you know, take that as you will.
Interesting that you are already thinking about the ethical component.
Yeah. Well, you always have to think about the ethical component. If you don't, what's the difference between you and anybody who does anything even less ethically?
Yeah, I agree with you. Also, you said that you wouldn't use ChatGPT for a newsletter. How come?
My family has a newsletter that people can get at realpowerfamily.com, and that is meant to be us speaking. When people see that they're reading something that we write for them, that is not meant to be just something that we give random info to. It's meant to be actually from us for them. And AI isn't us, if that makes sense.
I love that. Yeah, that totally makes sense. Also, you have written a book with one of the greats, Mark Victor Hansen.
Yep.
And now people are writing books with ChatGPT. Talk to me about the process of writing a book as a child with Mark Victor Hansen.
Well, I've had a few different experiences writing books, and that can get into the AI implications of it. So writing books, the best thing, writing my first book, was really, and this one, my first one, if I can do it, so can you. It wasn't even through Mark Victor Hansen. It was through just, I had bought a course and wanted to use that and write a book to help people. And I got the course, and it took me pretty much a full year to finish writing the book and getting it published. And it was just about how I got started investing in real estate. And if I didn't say it already, the name is If I Can Do It, So Can You. Then I had given that book to a lot of different people, and eventually I gave it to Mark Victor Hansen, and he thought it was so cool that he told me that he'd like to publish another book with me, or for me. And that's where my second book, The Garage, came from. And recently, my third book, The Fall and Rise of Atlas Gold, I wrote a second book in the same series. That is a interesting process, because you write the outline, you start writing the book, you revise the outline in the book, you edit it, you give it to somebody to edit for grammar, then you go through the whole thing again and sometimes have to rewrite entire sections, but you end up with a full book. And then you do all the other stuff to publish it, all the menial, okay, let's get a cover, okay, let's get illustrations for the newest books, let's get it all looking nice and pretty with the special fonts for the chapters, whatever. Then after you have that, you give it to the publishing company or Amazon or whatever, however you're going to do it. with AI, and I don't know how much AI can do, but you can get AI to make images and things, and you can probably get them to make most or all of a cover. You can get them to write the book. You can get them to write the outline to write the book. And you can do, I'm sure, a few other things. So really, you could write a book in an hour using entirely AI with minimal editing and stuff, which I don't think I'm ever going to write a book using AI. I'm definitely not going to use it to write anything like nonfiction, but if I'm writing a fiction book, I'd have to consider all the moral implications of that and think about it. And I'm definitely not going to do anything with that heavy editing. But either way, that is, I don't know how to describe that. That is something that it's brand new, and I really don't know how to feel about all of that just yet.
I feel like it would be interesting to take like your draft and literally just copy and paste it in ChatGPT and be like, rephrase this and just see what it did.
Yeah, you could totally do that. In fact, recently, ChatGPT, like you can now create your own AIs with it and customize it, and it gives you a bunch of different options. And one of them helps give you advice on writing. And I gave it my two newest books, The Garage and The Fall of Rise and of Alice Cole, just to see what it said.
Yeah.
And on the first book, it said, it's good, but you could probably use more challenges for the main character. And it gave me a couple other things. And I'm like, well, isn't that handy? The second book was meant to give more of that. I must be pretty smart. And then the second book, it gave me a couple of advices, but generally said it was pretty good. So, I mean, I'll take it.
Maybe you should have like a testimonial from ChatGPT. Like,
I don't think that's something I'd actually put on my website, but that might be an interesting joke to make to my friends.
Or a snapshot of it and do like a post like ChatGPT said I was good. In fact, I wrote my second book before I knew it was going to recommend that.
Yeah, I could totally, maybe I'll make an Instagram post about that sometime. It's just like ChatGPT says this is a 10 out of 10 book.
Or a meme. That would be like a funny meme.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. I don't know. But that's an interesting thing I hadn't thought of doing.
I'm like, dang, he's ChatGPT approved. That's pretty cool. I've never gotten a, hey, that's perfect, or good idea, like a well done from ChatGPT. That's a heck of a pat on the back.
Amazon number one bestseller, ChatGPT approved.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? I feel like that's like the next LinkedIn certification, or like the next LinkedIn like add-on. Does your
LinkedIn
self-published
AI book?
Yeah, like does your self-published book get ChatGPT approved?
I don't know. Well, if I start seeing ChatGPT approved on books out there, we get credit for this, all right? Or maybe you do. I think you came up with the idea.
You heard it here first. Yeah. Hey, you know what? ChatGPT could actually be listening right now because my cell phone is right by the computer and we're being listened to. Right?
Probably, exactly. Probably. I don't have...
Somebody just came up with that company right now.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. It's amazing how many trackers and stuff you can have on your phone without realizing it. But we'll see. We'll see. If I get a bunch more ChatGPT ads, we know why.
That is hysterical. Okay, so what else are you learning? What else are you interested in? How else are you going to change the world, Devin?
Well, I'm interested in a bunch of different things. I guess one thing I've gotten into a bit more recently, in addition to AI, is like actually coding and doing a bit more of like how some of these programs and things that we use every day are made and some of the things that go into that. I'm not good at it, but I am starting to learn a little bit about it, and I want to learn more because frankly, that's where a lot of our world is heading. And if I don't understand enough about it, I'm going to get left behind.
That's very smart. Did you go to like coding camp?
Not coding camp, although I did take a college course on computer science. So that gave me my kind of base level about how coding works and how to translate binary into, you know, human numbers.
Wow. What else did you learn on college campus?
I've taken a few classes there. I started off in a basics physics course when I was 12, and it was really basic physics. And I've done quite a few other courses. I got a B in public speaking, as I'm sure you can tell. Like, yeah, college is not about learning. It's about checking the right boxes. As with getting a bank loan, I think is also similar. It's about checking the right boxes.
Tell me more.
Well, I'm not the perfect person to talk about this because the bank hasn't actually given me a loan. When I was writing my first book, If I Can Do It, So Can You, I went to 4 banks and they each told me, no, we don't give loans to minors. Some of them rephrased it, but that was the basic concept. And I guess that was the first box. Must be over 18, which kind of makes sense based on the laws. But quick summary, people that are under 18 can sign contracts, but those contracts are not enforceable. It's basically the same thing as if it was a verbal contract.
So how did you get around writing contracts?
So once again, they're completely legal. And oh, I just can't use banks, but I can still buy property from other people, just like I would normally. I get loans from private lenders. Pretty much just like I would normally. And I just can't use banks. And some people decide not to loan to me. All right, that's fine. That's, I guess, their choice. And I'll just have to find somebody else.
How many properties are you currently managing?
I currently own 46 units. And I mentioned I'm the COO of my family's management company, which manages, like, I want to say 450 some.
Are there any states you wouldn't invest in?
The 3 countries known as California, Illinois, and New York are 3 that I'm going to say, no, I probably wouldn't invest in those. Really, I only invest like within 40 minutes of my management company because that's how far we'll manage. And we've considered buying property in a couple of other states, but we haven't actually done that yet.
Now, you do also enjoy teaching other kids your age how to invest. And are you still doing the Discord channel around that?
Unfortunately, not. Not too many people are interested or willing to do anything. I used to have a Discord channel for people under 18 or actually under 24 to learn about business or investing. Although that unfortunately closed down. That being said, I'm still doing other things to help teach people that are my age, like The Garage and The Fall and Rise of Atlas Gold. Those books are both meant for kids and teenagers, and they teach some good business lessons in just a fun fictional story. It's meant to be fun with some learning. Like I was talking about earlier in the show, you got to make it fun so the kids want to learn. Then my brother and I have now started doing, like, it's just us two on the radio show. And so we're helping teach both the parents and the kids that way.
Wow.
And hopefully we can help more people and inspire some more people with that. We're even talking about getting some really cool young people on as guests. I think you actually had commented on my one Instagram reel about that and recommended one person.
Yeah, I think that that's a great idea to bring the next generation into what you're doing with books and radio and podcasting. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's all about helping teach more people. And I really want to teach my generation because if we're going to live the longest, we're going to get the most benefit out of teaching them. Or at least that's my thought process for it.
How do you think you can reach them? I know that you mentioned like making it fun, but why do you think the Discord thing didn't work? I mean, I personally don't use Discord that much. I know a lot of people do. Do you think
a lot of people, especially my age, do? Yeah. I'm not entirely sure. That was targeted at too many different people. Really, the big problem was the targeting wasn't set up right and not quite enough advertising, I think. Long story short, it wasn't set up the way it needed to be. And so it just didn't end up working. I think more people, it would help if I could just start by getting their mindset set up right. And then after they have some of the basic understanding, then perhaps we'll do something more with the, here you can actually come to ask questions and discuss deals here. So that could be something different I look into in the future, but it's not something I'm doing quite yet.
Have you done any just like Zoom calls with people that are interested that are your age?
Not really. I guess a couple weeks ago, I did do like a Zoom call. Me and another person, another young author, went on a Zoom call about becoming an author. And that went out to a few people, but I haven't really done too much stuff like that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I would be interested in your thoughts because now you've written 3 books.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do differently from the first one to the third one?
The first one, I self-published it and did pretty much everything myself. And by myself, I mean with my dad and the rest of my family. But I was actually the one writing most of the book, or all the book. And then my dad helped me edit it. And my grandma actually helped with the grammar because she was a grammar teacher or English teacher. And I'm sure she added hundreds of commas.
That's cute.
Yeah. And I did that. My second book, I used a publishing company, Mark Victor Hansen Library. And so they actually made the cover and did a whole bunch of other things. They did the editing. They did a lot of the work for it that I would normally have done. And there are benefits and drawbacks to having a publishing company or self-publishing. The abbreviated version is you make more money per book if you self-publish because a publishing company is going to take a percentage of profits or whatever. And with the publishing company, you have slightly less work to get it published because you have somebody that you're working with to do most of the stuff that you need to do.
Yeah, that is the abbreviated version. I also think that you need to think about, like, what's your goal? Do you want to make money or do you want it to be in more people's hands or do you want it to lead to business? Did you think about any of those things?
The first book, I wanted to teach people, and if I made some money, that would be nice. And I think I helped inspire quite a few people with it so far. And I guess I made a little bit of money, not a huge amount, but some. Then my second book and third book I have so far definitely lost money. And I think some people in my generation have learned from it and were semi-inspired by it. But that one I haven't seen as much success with just yet.
Interesting. So you've done a radio show, 3 books, speaking. I mean, I am just blown away by all you were doing at 15. Have you ever like wanted to just join a basketball team or be a lifeguard or not do anything
lifeguard,
professional?
Well, one, I'm not that impressive. I haven't done all of this at 15. I'm 16 now.
16, even? Okay.
Yeah.
How many properties did you say? 46 properties at 16.
Lifeguard, in all honesty, sounds boring. Sitting there in a chair for hours on end. Maybe that's just me. Basketball sounds like a lot of energy. I'm not in that good of shape. I guess my parents taking me to real estate meetings and everything else since I was born. I've mostly grown up around adults, and so I tend to generally gravitate more towards adults or teenagers that act closer to adults.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I feel like some kids would push back against that. Did you ever push back?
Not really. I mean, there are times where I wasn't entirely thrilled with everything that was happening. Although generally, no, I chose where I wanted to go and I put myself where I needed to be to go that way.
Interesting.
So my parents helped me get to the destination, but I had to choose the destination they wanted to go.
They must have made it seem enticing.
So far they have. My parents have never given me an allowance and they were also teaching me about money. So I understood that if I wanted to have money to buy things, I was going to have to make the money. It wasn't just going to be given to me. And to earn that money, I could either work at a job, which, by the way, I did not like because I mentioned I reconciled accounts for my parents and things, and they paid me to do that. So I got paid for doing that. And while they might have introduced it as a game to get me into it, after doing it for long enough, it was not super fun. I mean, how fun is reconciling accounts and doing other things? There was plenty of bookkeeping things I did, so I got decent at bookkeeping and numbers. either way, I would rather have the own the business and not work at a job. And I decided I wanted to do that. And then I just decided I was going to do it now, because why wait? I have no reason to wait. There's a Chinese proverb, when's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. The second best time is today. And well, at the time, today was pretty much 20 years ago. Yeah, that is a lot of jumping in time, but I was essentially starting at the very young age rather than waiting. Because say I buy a property at 7 years old on, say, a 15-year mortgage, that property will be paid off when I'm 22. So I get something, I buy a property, and maybe it doesn't make any money, or maybe it makes $50 a month. And then when I'm 22, it's paid off and makes $500 a month. Maybe I buy five of those. How awesome would it be to have an extra $2,500 a month when you're only 22 years old?
But what happens when you're not renting them, or when they become an expense?
When they're not rented out, then I have to use money from the reserves, like you set aside money in reserves for when people move out, when the roof goes bad, when the furnace goes bad, when you need to replace the siding, whatever else. And so you have to take some of the money that you make and put it aside for that. That's more or less a basic principle of business. You have to have some money set aside for when those big expenses happen. And a lot of people can't seem to do that. And that's why plenty of people would rather rent properties than own them, because they can't handle setting aside that money for an expense.
And contractors are expensive. So have you learned how to fix things?
I have learned how to fix some things, but I didn't have a driver's license until earlier this year. Oh, once again, I turned 16 this year. I couldn't have gone out in the middle of the night to fix a toilet unless I woke a parent up, and neither of my parents being, that would not have ended well for me. It would not have been fun. So I had to hire people, especially to start with. And then I did that. And sure, contractors can be expensive. So you have to find the ones that will give you the best value for your money. And you have to learn how to hire people and set things up and not just use the same big company everybody uses. All right, we're going to use this person, or maybe we find somebody with a small group where I can get a much better deal on them than going to whatever big companies would do that.
Have you had any catastrophes in the middle of the night where you're like, I've got to wake up my parents?
No, I have people to deal with that so that I don't get woken up in the middle of the night for it.
That's good. But in the beginning, you didn't.
In the beginning, I still hired a management company. The tenants called them, and whoever had the, as we call it, emergency phone, where emergency calls go, they would, all right, somebody's furnace went out. It's the middle of winter in Ohio. All right, let's call our furnace guy. All right, Bill, we've got a furnace out. Can you go fix that tonight? And they'd handle it. And I might get told about it the next morning.
You're like, I'm glad they didn't wake me up with that. No.
Yeah. So there was a problem. We got it fixed. Move on. That's it. There we go.
Yeah. But it's like, how many backup contractors do you need to have so that you're not woken up?
It depends on how many properties you own. And I don't remember. I think there's like a conversion. You need about one contractor per however many units. And I want to say that's like per 50 units, but I'm not sure offhand. But there is for a lot of things, and it's not a perfect system. But generally, if you have this many people and this many units, you will overall be fine. Because in this business, you work with a lot of, on average, this will happen. On average, 60% of the rent you make for a house will go towards like the general expenses, not including your mortgage, and to when people move out, when people aren't paying enough, when people are moved in but not paying, that sort of thing.
Do you think that owning real estate is the best way to become financially free?
It is a very good way, as far as I have seen. And it is one of the best that I know for me in my area. Everybody, once again, like we said earlier, everybody is different and not everybody has the same skills. So there are some things that will work a lot better for some people and some things that won't work. real estate is a pretty good way for a lot of people to become financially free. And some people just don't have the knowledge, time, ability, name your excuse, to do it. So not everyone will be able to become financially free with real estate.
What advice would you give for somebody that wanted to get started?
Start by learning. Reading books is a great way. A couple great books for when you're getting started in business or investing, specifically real estate. Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki is one of the best of all time. And my book, If I Can Do It, So Can You, really goes through the beginning steps of getting started in real estate and has a lot of good tips about buying your first deal or buying your first few deals, starting a company and some things like that. It goes in detail, but at a very simple level. I wrote it when I was 11 years old, so it should be fairly simple for just about anyone to read. But those two books should give you a lot of great basis on that. And then also my parents' book, Family Success Triangle, talks about how they raised my brother and I and why we've done some of the things that we've done, but also talks a lot about business and how to start and grow a business.
I love that you put in a plug for your dad.
Well, yeah, we always have to promote the entire family. And really, the only book I haven't promoted from the family is my brother's book, The Treehouse, which is another fictional story with some good lessons for kids and teenagers that it's also in the same universe as The Garage. And there's actually some crossover and it's cool. Now I've promoted all the books.
I love it. I love it. Like, what is your philosophy on family? Have you come up with that? Have you decided kind of like what you want your future to look like? Are you thinking about that at all?
My entire family's brand is that we're the real power family and we stick together as a family. We help each other. We help each other grow even when it's not comfortable.
I love that. And I think that my dad will love that. He very much feels like brothers should look out for each other and that family mm-hmm. should look out for each other. And
yeah, there's too many people in this world trying to tear families apart. If we had a stronger family unit, I think we would have a lot less problems in the world. I forget the exact statistic, but I think it was a crazy high number, like a large percentage of the men in prison never had a significant father figure. I forget the exact statistics, but I want to say it was like 80-some percent. And maybe that was just for Black people. I don't remember. I'd have to look up this statistic, but it was something like that. And that is something that if we could change, that might make the world a much better place.
Amen. Is there anything that you would like to ask my dad?
Not specifically, although I would like to essentially say thank you to him because I'm sure he had a big hand in helping to raise you to be who you are and help this many people, or at least entertain or everything else that you do.
Oh, that is so sweet. Thank you so much. And I am a big fan of your dad's and I connected him to Nikki Ballew and you guys did mm-hmm. an interview with him. And I feel like our circle is just getting smaller and everybody that your dad loves, I love. And that's what this is about, is spreading positivity, spreading what we're learning, you know, encouraging that intergenerational connection. And I love that your family has a family run business and a family run show and keep up that power family.
Yeah, it's all about the family. Create that family success triangle for yourself. You have business, you have investing, and you have family. Bring it together, and that's a triangle, the strongest geometric shape.
That's awesome.
You've heard from my mom. Now, let's switch it over to Grandpa.
All right, what do you think about investing in what you know and Devin?
Well, I think Devin has got it right. How old is he right now? Is he, what, like 20?
No, he's like a year older than Rafi. I think he's like 16-ish.
16. Well, at 16, he sounds like he's already got 16 years of experience. And literally, he's right on track on most issues. And I think the most fascinating part is that learning and education is not necessarily, again, where you learn at an institution. It's feeling it, touching it, having it be fun, experiencing it outside the box, where he's learned the most lessons. And with the tools of today, you can actually learn right on the computer, right on the internet. even using AI tools that you all were laughing about, where you can just have an idea and you can use AI almost to do everything for you and even give you an analysis of what you're doing and give you a vote of confidence on what you're doing. And as you know, you can even reword things in a manner where not only does it sound professional, but it sounds like it's giving you instruction, where instead of you having AI work for you, you work for the AI. It can be really scary.
I showed you how I used it.
Yeah. It's just fascinating. But look how at a very early age, people think that for things to be attainable, obviously you've heard it before where you have to start young, but you don't have to be a prodigy. You can be a normal person starting off young and being introduced to business, being introduced to music, to be introduced to playing sports, whatever the field might be. The younger you start, you get a jump on it, and you're never too young to get started. That's really what comes out of this episode, is that anything is possible and it can happen right away in your life. And to make it fun, to make it exciting, to make it where you have the hands-on example of things, which is, of course, we've talked about before, is that hands-on knowledge, whether it's learning a business, or whether it's learning a sport or an art, if you enjoy it and you get started early and you get a feel of it, it becomes intoxicating where you live and breathe it and it becomes a part of you. And you can really get good at something at any age, but certainly the younger you are, you're building an exciting future. And to get started on it, why not? Do it as early as you can.
What did Grandpa Abe used to say?
What you learn in your youth, you have in your old age. Isn't that the truth? But the fact is that you're never too young to experience things. The issue is that what about being a child? What about letting them play jacks or hopscotch and just kick the ball around? Why does it have to be under any pressure? And what Devin is telling you is that it's not under pressure. If you make it fun, you make it exciting, if you have it where the teacher is professing whatever it might be, or your mentor, whatever it might be, and you do it in a collaboration where you're living and breathing it together, it's fun. It's wonderful. And the other interesting insight that you get out of it is that he also understands that when new things come out, you have to also adapt to it. And he knows it even at an early age. Why do you want to learn about programming or computers or AI? He says, because it's going to be part of your life. You're going to get left behind if you don't learn it. And not only do I want to learn it, but I want all my friends and anyone that knows me, I want to share it with them. I want our generation to be able to be up to date with whatever is coming out. And that's the giving back that we all should have in the back of our mind, is like, let's get it down and let's help someone along like they've helped us. And where do you get that? And maybe that's where homeschooling has an advantage, is that you're living and breathing everyday life where you're learning in a totally different environment or atmosphere. It's everyday living and making that part of your education, and where you don't have to go to school to be smart. And the more you really learn in running a business or running finance and learning about money, the funny part is sometimes they don't even teach that in school. And yet, if you don't know those things, your education is really well behind the eight ball, because you can be as smart as the book that you're reading, but if you don't have any common sense when it comes to money and people and knowing what to do with it, believe me, there's plenty of smart people that are taken to the cleaners. Literally. So this is really a very good episode, not only for the learning curve, but everyday living. You have to keep an open mind to all of your surroundings, and everybody around you can contribute to your education. And that's the legacy of our show, is we're trying to share and communicate ideas and where we should all be able to learn together. That's part of the Better Call Daddy show.
Thanks for listening. Now I think I'm going to go call my dad.
I'll say goodbye and see you the next time.
Thanks for listening to the Better Call Daddy show. Join us weekly for new episodes and more daddy wisdom.
Better Call Daddy is good advice always.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. You can also find special episodes on my YouTube channel, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Amazon Music, Alexa, or your preferred podcatcher. That's a wrap for now.